It's Christmas in the wizarding world of Harry Potter. Come to Universal Studios Hollywood now through January 6th and experience the magic of snow falling throughout Hogsmeade Village. Then watch Hogwarts Castle light up the night. Plus, discover more holiday magic all through the park, like Grinchmas on select dates. Visit UniversalStudiosHollywood.com and now buy a day and get a second day free. Offer valid for one day general admission through December 19th, 2018. Blackout dates and restrictions apply.
This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751, or send in your question through the website www.beatyourgenes.org. All right, good evening, everybody. It's Nate G here, along with Dr. Doug Lyle with the Beat Your Genes podcast. Dr. Lyle, how are you doing this evening?
Good. Good to hear your voice again, Nate.
All right, fantastic. Well, here in the United States, we just got done with Thanksgiving, and thank you guys all for bearing with us with the replay we did last week. It was a lot to be thankful for, especially you, the listener, who's helped us create this show and helped us, you know, keep an audience going. So Couldn't thank you guys enough. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Dr. Lyle, for being the star of our show and having so much great wisdom and great knowledge to share with us.
Well, thanks for dragging me into this, Nate. We didn't know 3 years ago what we were going to do, but it's turned out like a lot of fun. It's great.
Oh, it's great. Okay, well, today's theme is we are getting into the winter holiday season. And many of the listeners and friends have been asking me, well, how do you, and patients here at the Fasting Escape have been asking, well, how do you get through the holidays? Because not only do we have to socialize with friends and family that maybe we haven't seen all year long, but we also have to put up with some of the cross-examination that comes with being slightly different when it comes to our diet and our lifestyle. And if that's not enough, we've got politics to deal with and all the, you know, conversations around the dinner table that tend to stress some people out. So Today's show, we're going to be talking about how we kind of manage that in with regards to healthy eating. So Dr. Lau, when you get together for Thanksgiving and for the holidays, do you, you know, you have like the stereotypical people at your dinner table, ones who will talk politics and make inappropriate jokes?
I don't have
jokes,
a friend. keep it simple. The key to a good life. Keep it all simple.
Perfect solution right there. There we go. Podcast is over now. Now we know what to do.
All right. Let's move on. Let's go to questions.
All right. Dear Dr. Lyle, this one is about how to just live healthy in general. Dr. Lyle, I'm 65. I'm on mild cholesterol and blood pressure pills, but I feel very tired a lot. I'm overweight. I follow a plant-based diet as much as I possibly can. But when I'm with my friends and family, no one really supports this. They joke about me living on leaves and such. So I'd love to hear any suggestions on how to deal with this situation. I've lost quite a bit of weight due to your teachings, and so they're logical and they make total sense. But any advice on losing more and how to deal with my friends and family would be much appreciated.
Well, let's see now. I mean, this is sort of the sort of omnipresent problem facing people. It sounds like the person's done has done a pretty good job, and is on a mild amount of medications. Even a mild amount of those medications can drag your life down. So it sounds like the person's on cholesterol and blood pressure medications. Depending upon what those are, those can have non-trivial side effects in terms of how vital you feel. I would say that in most cases, those medications are not indicated. So I'm not here to get crosswise with the AMA and have somebody hang me for giving advice. So I don't know who the specific person is, and I'm not giving them specific advice, but I would certainly say that it's worth possibly seeking out a challenging second opinion on whether or not these medications are appropriate. For example, I think that there's been a dispute or a disagreement in the Europeans versus the Americans with respect to when you start medicating high blood pressure. A number of years ago in England, the British Medical Council determined by looking at the evidence that it was not worth medicating until the person was at 160 over 100 or above. In the United States, they'll diagnose you at 140 over 90 and they'll start medicating you at that level. There's a reason, and they pushed it down to start to warn people and start to give them medication even at 135. The reason for this isn't to save anybody, because there's no support for that scientifically. The whole reason is that there's huge numbers of people that will throw a 138 systolic blood pressure when they're in the doctor's office. You should also know that you shouldn't be diagnosed with high blood pressure unless you have three consecutive readings over time that indicate that your blood pressure is high. Usually when people take their blood pressure in a doctor's office, it's quite a bit higher than it really is, that it would be if they were taking it on their own at home. That's just because people get adrenalized in the doctor's office, and typically the amount of points is something between 10 and 20 points, which is a pretty big deal. So typically they'll diagnose you with hypertension off a single reading, which is not the appropriate way to do it, and they'll do it in the doctor's office, and maybe you have a 145. So it's already 10 to 20 points high, and it's been done once. This is how people wind up on high blood pressure pills for their life, and they have negative consequences in terms of their vitality, and they're not helping them at all in terms of their mortality statistics. Now, so that's just the blood pressure story. Now, I don't know. The reason I'm suspecting this is that the person said, well, I'm mild cholesterol and blood pressure, so I have no idea what their situation is. But I'm going to suspect that typically they're probably being over-medicated, meaning medicated at all. The cholesterol medications are pretty well also a loser. There's strong evidence that this has been way distorted in the reports of any utility of this stuff. So obviously everybody's situation is different, but I'm not hearing about a person with a cardiovascular threat of significance. They're not reporting that. 65 years old, moderately overweight, they're being medicated as people are typically being medicated for zero or incredibly small benefits that would be dwarfed by diet and lifestyle changes that are possible for the person to do themselves. So this person has already done some diet and lifestyle changes and had some effects. There's all kinds of ways to attack the problem of taking the next step. They say they're doing a pretty good job on a healthy diet. So you could always do a better job on a healthy diet. I would be looking to try to get a consultation with a physician who's a little wiser than the average bear. You might need to get a phone consult with someone who would be holding a challenging second opinion about whether they ought to be medicated, given the situation that they're in. If it's close and convenient, and you can afford it, come to Fasting Escape, for goodness sakes. Get a fast, get yourself your palate a little bit cleaner, a little bit sharper, drop some of the extra weight that you're frustrated with, get rid of the medications. This is what we see. I can't tell you, this is absolutely routine at the McDougal program, which is, a whole diet lifestyle, a whole educational experience. So it's an expensive thing. But we do this routinely. We'll have 40 people coming in there, somewhat overweight, on hypertensive meds, on cholesterol medications, not feeling that good. And what happens in 10 days, we turn it around. And so this person not feeling that good, probably over-medicated, and the ship isn't quite tight enough. What I would tell you to do is if you can come out to one of these programs, great. If you can't, then you can do it yourself. But it would behoove you to get some assistance or at least agreement with, if you don't want to face the idea of getting another consult with another doctor, talk to your own doctor about the notion of running an experiment and weaning you down off the medications as you tighten up your diet and lifestyle for the next few weeks. And let's just see what happens to the numbers, and let's just see whether or not there's, quote, any pressing need for those medications, and let's see how you feel. You're probably a few weeks away from dropping some weight, feeling much better, and not being on those medications. So anyway, that's what I'm thinking, and that's probably the way to go.
Fantastic. And if you are thinking of the Fasting Escape, just go to fastingescape.com. McDougall program is over in Santa Rosa, so that's Dr. McDougall's Health and Medical Center. So it's a great program. When I was at True North, we used to go there and watch some of the talks there. It was really, really fascinating. So,
especially
all right, our next question. Yeah. You know what I really loved, though, is watching you and Jeff Novick kind of battle it out with your introductions. That was always fun.
That's all very fun. You bet. All right. What else we got?
All right, so our next question is about struggling with the ego trap and healthy eating and body image. Dr. Yeah. Lyle, I'm a 29-year-old woman. Over the years, I've been into fitness and whole foods vegan living. I've managed to get the body that I've always wanted, six-pack, lean, etc. But this has led me straight into the ego trap, as people have seen me like that online and in person. Now, I'm scared to be seen around when I'm not in peak condition, like I am at the moment. I feel that that is what is expected of me, and I'm failing, and so I withdraw. And it's gotten to the point where I can't even look at my own body when I'm alone, and I find it difficult to shower and change clothes as I feel exposed. I wear baggy clothing, it gets in the way of my relationship, and I've also began overeating. I eat an SOS-free diet, but I've begun over-consuming bananas, dates, nuts, and oat balls, things like that. And it's just a loop of me saying to myself, you're failing, you're fat, you're failing, you're fat, over and over in my own head. It's becoming quite intrusive into my life, which I also beat myself up about. So my question is, as an adult, how can I get myself out of this ego trap?
Fabulous question. Go to Fasting Escape. Just kidding. All right. Let's see now. What I would say would be the following: that what we have is it's interesting. I have no idea, of course, who this person is, but it sounds to me like they may have a following online, for goodness sakes. So they have some degree of some non-trivial degree, at least in their own. Their own internal experience of where their existence is that they have a substantial amount of pseudo-esteem. So people know of them, and they actually don't know our person, but they think they know them, and they admire them for their whole foods, vegan, lean body, etc. Okay. So what we've got here is a panic about the dynamics between pseudo-esteem versus self-esteem. What we want to do, the way we get out of the ego trap, is we actually back up and attempt to attack the fundamentals of what it is that we're really trying to accomplish. So sometimes this is a little bit unclear. So if the person is trying to look as good as they possibly can on social media so that they can get followers and I don't know, sell a book or something, that's a problem. And so and when I say it's a problem, what I mean is that what we need to do when we're in trouble is we need to figure out what end it is that we are seeking. What is the most important end that we're seeking? And if it's, seeking a celebrity, then that's one thing. If it's actually being healthy and living a healthy lifestyle, and then anything that follows from that, is fine. But this is the most important component of this process, then that's what we focus on. And what we're going to do is we're going to focus on healthy living is or a healthful situation, and essentially the aesthetics that result from being healthy are going to be the result of executing fundamentals. So our job is to back up and essentially get a list together, a relatively short list of the fundamentals that are required to execute. Yeah, in this person's pretty driven. So if we want to put a goal at excellent health, then that's fine. So we put a list together of the fundamentals that are required for excellent health. And then what it is that we're going to do is we're going to have essentially a daily checklist that we can make on a computer, or we can, you know, Xerox little forms if you're like me and from the 19th century, that we're going to have essentially a plan that we are going to execute on. Now, the plan is not going to be to be perfect. The plan is going to be good. And it's going to be good enough. It's going to require some degree of relatively impressive diligence. And what we're going to be doing here is we're actually trying to learn a very important lesson, one of the most important lessons that a person can ever learn in life. And that is that what we're going to be making the priority in this thing is going to be self-esteem, not esteem. So we're going to be learning about the self-esteem mechanism. And the way the self-esteem mechanism works is you have an internal audience that's watching your performances from day to day. And at this point, what's happening is our person is in the ego trap, and therefore she's actually reacting against the pressures of the ego trap. She's kicking over the table. She's not going all the way to French fries and hamburgers, but what she's doing is she's just essentially feeling the pressure that the bar is just too high and the expectations are too high. And so she's kicking over the table and willfully, effectively self-destructing. That's exactly what people in the ego trap do. You're so frustrated and you're feeling too much pressure, and you relieve the pressure, in effect, by demonstrating, both in this case to the internal audience and to anybody else who's watching, that you are really not trying. So you cannot be judged on what the outcome is. It's a brutal trap. It's like a vice on a person's well-being and their progress in life towards anything. And so the way we get out of it is we back it up and we say, okay, now wait a second. What we're going to do is we're going to be changing the goal. And it's a tricky little shift because the human nature is absolutely designed for outcomes. It's not designed for process. The outcomes it's designed for are the adulation or respect or love of other people. That's what it's after. What we're going to need to do is we're going to subvert that, and we're going to go instead for admiration that comes from within. We're aiming at self-esteem. Now, the self-esteem process is your internal audience that is watching you will have a natural psychological reaction and communication to you. The self-esteem mechanism is not you. It's effectively other people. It might as well be other little tiny little people populating you inside your head. And so what that self-esteem mechanism does, where that the internal audience, what that does is it signals to you just as if real people were watching you. It signals to you what they think of your performance. Now, when you do one day of your checklist, your internal audience is not going to applaud you. They're not. You will not feel an immense relief of an increase of positive feedback from your internal audience to your esteem meter, so or to yourself. In other words, you will not be feeling some surge of internal well-being. You might, but you probably won't. And the reason why is that what this mechanism is, the self-esteem mechanism, is a mechanism of reputation. So effectively, what that feeling is the reputation that you have with yourself. That's almost an exact quote from Nathaniel Brandon, who was a pioneer in thinking about self-esteem, 40 years ago. So let's think about this: that if you have somebody that's consistently late for work, and they tell the boss, "No, I'm going to start coming in on time," this is completely unimpressive, and the boss will not change their feelings about the person one bit. If they come in the next day on time, the boss will still not change their opinion substantially at all on one day's basis. On 2 days' basis, it will still not change, and on 3 days' basis, it will barely change at all. But on 10 days' basis, it will change. If a person who's been unreliable and then suddenly for 10 straight days, they are there on time, the boss cannot help but change his or her opinion of the individual. Now, they don't say, "Oh, my God, you're a reliable person." What they say is, I'm respecting the performance that I've been seeing. Okay, I feel more positively towards you. That's precisely what the internal audience will feel towards the self. So as the self starts to work diligently at the fundamentals, the first thing the internal audience may say is, you're kind of out of shape and you're not quite as fancy as you should be, and one day's work didn't change anything. I'm not that impressed with how it is that you look or anything that you're doing. So don't expect there to be a transformation from the internal audience to the esteem meter in a day, because it doesn't work that way. Now, the bummer is that's just when you need it, okay? You need it most early, but that isn't how it works. Just like you know, when you're in trouble at work and you really might get fired because you got a bad reputation for being a flake and coming in late, you know, you would really like to get an increase in security and a big positive feedback for showing up on time one day. But they won't give it to you because they're not impressed. But if you do 10 days in a row, suddenly they're starting to shift how it is that they think about you. And the same exact thing happens when there's any area of our life, and it doesn't matter what it is. It could be finances. It could be personal health and fitness. It could be how orderly our home is. It could be our credit. It could be, you know, how we've treated members of our family. It could be how we've treated a primary partner in a relationship. No matter what the situation is, if we have been doing mediocre work and our self-esteem mechanism has been giving us feedback that we've been doing mediocre work, and the way it will do that is it will have a feeling of disgust and disappointment. And that feeling of not being right with the world, that we haven't done very well, that we've been disappointing or we've actually been disgusting, whether that be in performance and abilities and execution, or whether it's been a deeper and more bizarre moral type issue where we really haven't been that honest, haven't been honest enough and haven't been fair enough, okay? Whatever the issues are, the solution is to get to the fundamentals of whatever it is required with respect to these achievements, and start to check those things off. And we set very reasonable goals. So we don't set the goal of, well, I'm going to go out and make, you know, a sale this week in real estate because I'm feeling down on myself because I haven't been successful. And I went to a sales seminar with Tony Robbins, and he said to think big. This is not going to do it. The concept of self-talk is nonsense. Self-talk isn't something that you talk yourself into that's going to change anything. Self-talk is actually the result of deep unconscious algorithms are reporting to you about what they think of your performance. Okay, so people try to solve the problem of self-esteem crises like this top-down. The notion is that you need to speak differently to yourself and take it easy to yourself and quit beating yourself up. Never going to happen. What you're getting when you hear the self-criticism translated into English in your own mind, that is your internal audience reporting to you. It's giving you a message about why it is that you're in trouble and how this entire performance is very, very dicey. Now, the reason you're doing it is because you have actually had the bar set too high by somebody. And as a result, you're in the ego trap, which is this very bizarre motivational dilemma where we have more to lose than we have to gain by putting our best foot forward. Okay? So what we're going to do, the way we're going to get out of that ego trap, is we're going to say, listen, what are we after? What we're after is not the achievements that are going to wow the audience. We're after the achievements that are going to impress the internal audience. And those achievements are going to be diligence. The internal audience will become very fair and actually readjust its expectations when it watches us make great efforts but not have necessarily great results. And so it's an extremely fair mechanism if we give it a chance. So the solution to this young woman's dilemma is to have a checklist of things that she needs to do every day that are very good. Does not have to be perfect, but there has to be a list of things. This is what you're going to do, okay? And you're going to do these things, and you're going to do them over and over and over for many days in a row. And what you are watching for is not the 1.5 or 2 pounds that you're going to lose. Yeah, you might watch for that, but I don't care, and that's not the keys to the prison door, okay? The keys to the prison door is you watching very carefully your internal audience. You need to watch how it works. This is the key to the prison door for the rest of your life, okay? Feelings of malaise, ego trap, overwhelm, you know, self-destructive feelings, etc. This is what you need to learn. You need to learn that the nature of the mechanics, the psychological mechanics of the internal audience and the self-esteem mechanism. Once you do this, if you do this, you trust me, okay? Take a leap of faith because, you know, we got nothing else to do. Nothing else is going to work. Don't go to the hypnotist. Don't go to the fancy seminar. No need to do it, okay? What you need to do is make your checklist and don't make it low. Make it that you would be reasonably impressed with it, okay? Reasonably impressed with the performance, but it's doable. Then you do it every day, okay? You do that thing every day, and even the most punitive, nasty, you know, way too a high pressurized personality that has a very, you know, rough and difficult to impress internal audience, trust me, in 2 weeks, that thing starts to be impressed. And when it is, and when you feel the internal audience starting to shift and give you a feeling, there's an unmistakable feeling that comes, and the feeling is pride, okay? That you can't help but know what that feeling feels like. You feel proud, okay? There's only one thing that creates that feeling, and that's an internal audience saying, well done. You've done a good job. I'm impressed with your efforts. Not necessarily impressed with any outcome that I've seen, but I'm impressed with the effort. That's what we're looking for, okay? When you see that happen, you will discover that this is a huge lever and a major percentage of the variance that is determining your happiness. So your happiness is significantly and non-trivially dependent on what other people think of you. That is true. But the most central feature that will determine your happiness is going to be what your internal audience thinks of you. And we have indirect 100% control over how that mechanism works. We would love to have direct control over how it works, but it would be absurd evolutionarily. In other words, the evolutionary system would never devise such a mechanism that you could stare in the mirror and tell yourself great things and then feel good. That would be ridiculous, okay? Evolution would penalize any such creature that would say how great they were and would believe it without any performance that would actually translate into any increased competitiveness that would lead to more and better situations with respect to mating, friendship, and trade. It would have to be the case that good feelings had better only be coming when they are actually cues or associated or correlates with what will actually translate to superior performances that will result in statistical increases in gene survival likelihood. That's what the self-esteem mechanism is for. That's why when you do the work and you get yourself, you pull in your horns and quit looking out and see what the audience is saying about you. And instead, you get inside and you look about what you are going to say about you. And you do that work, what will happen, and the beautiful, important secret here is to find out that your moods of how it is that you feel about yourself are highly dynamic. They will change very quickly. It will not require that you rule the universe, pick up 15,000 followers, you know, make a bunch of money selling your view of how it is to get healthy and thin and fit and beautiful. Those are ancillary achievements, and they may be important for other reasons, but they're not the central focus of what needs to happen to turn your life around. What needs to happen to turn your life around is you need to be impressed with you, or respectful of you would be a better way to put it, okay? And that means do your due diligence, do what it is that you need to do, do it daily, and within 10 days, the vast majority of people feel very differently about themselves. They wake up in the morning with an eagerness to attack the list, okay, to do it again, to have that feeling of moral rightness with themselves again, okay? And then, of course, the way this works is, if you are doing the fundamentals properly in the right way and you are learning and growing and improving, then what happens as a result? What happens as a result is eventually the marketplace can see it. Fine. Wonderful. As far as I'm concerned, that's an ancillary byproduct of what happens from doing the right things. So the job in life is to do the right things, to earn the most important esteem that there is to earn, which is your self-esteem, okay? And if it turns out the world doesn't like what it is that you have to sell, okay, we can look at that later. If your abs aren't tight enough, if you aren't, you know, they don't think you're quite cute enough, they don't buy what it is that you're selling, hey, fair enough, okay? But your job is to do what you believe are the right things, and if you do those things, we let the rest take care of itself.
Absolutely fascinating. Right. Wow. Wow. Yeah, I really like this. Yeah. At first we thought we were talking about diet and lifestyle, and it turns into this whole talk about esteem dynamics and self-esteem. This is great, Dr. Lyle. I love it.
I'm glad you said esteem dynamics, because that's what I meant to try to say. Thank God. Let me just a 30-second recap. Something that has frustrated me as a psychologist for someone interested in psychology for almost 40 years now. It is 40 years. Good God. It's 40 years since I picked up. 40 years ago, I picked up The Psychology of Self-Esteem by Nathaniel Brennan. That's what stoked my interest in becoming a clinical psychologist. And now 40 years later, what frustrates me is that the field generally does not understand that esteem processes are dynamic. The notion is that how it is that you feel about yourself is extremely stuck in the muck of childhood processes, et cetera. Okay, how your parents treated you, things that happened to you, et cetera. Instead, what is missed is that the esteem mechanisms are extremely dynamic. The problem is that they aren't so dynamic that literally then people would like to believe that you can stare in a mirror and say pleasant things to yourself or get a bunch of flattery from somebody, and that's going to turn it around, okay? Well, it is dynamic enough that if someone does flatter you, it can make a difference about how you feel for about 15 minutes. But the most important thing for us to understand is that legitimate, lasting, or tenacious esteem processes and how it is that they work, they are very dynamic, but they're always processes that if they make any sense and have any fiber to them, they have to be earned. Okay, and so the process of earning esteem, either first from yourself and then from other people, understanding that esteem processes are by nature dynamic processes, understanding the nature of those dynamics, this is very important when it comes to people understanding how to optimize their life experience. And so that's why we're having this podcast, and that's why these are the things that dominate my thinking, whether we're talking about losing weight or we're talking about finding a partner for life, or we're talking about getting connected with friends, or we're talking about having success in business, whatever it is, it's all fundamentally, the fundamentals are the same. Figure out what you should be doing, what the fundamentally correct way of approaching the problem is, understand that that the competitive nature of whatever it is that you're trying to achieve has certain fundamentals, and there's nobody out there that has any secret sauce that's cheating those fundamentals. And your job is to take whatever talent, you know, looks, brains, personality, talent that you have, and approach the goals that are reasonable for you by addressing what the fundamentals are that you need to be working on. And then your job is to work on those fundamentals and make sure that the most important thing you're focused on is earning self-esteem first. That's what we do. And then we let the esteem processes take care of themselves, okay, which they largely will if we identify the right things. But, yes, this is sorry, recap went more than a couple of seconds.
No, that's okay.
Okay. All right, let's go ahead. Let's go on.
I love it. I love it, Dr. Lyle. All right, well, we got a caller on hold. So, callers, stay on hold. We're going to ask two quick questions from listeners because I put them up on the titles, and then we'll get to the caller. So, callers, just stay on hold just for a second.
Okay,
Dr. Lyle, our next two questions. Dr. Lyle, when family members do things that I'm strongly against, I begin to resent them, and I get extremely upset. For example, when my dad was a smoker, our relationship was very weak, and I disliked him for it. Recently, I found out my brother, who's the person I've been closest with my entire life, has been smoking weed. And as a result, I haven't spoken to him since. I don't mean to overreact or be the party pooper, but I can't control the resentment that I feel. I'm a very health-conscious individual, so maybe I just hate to see family go down unhealthy paths. My brother and I are both very disagreeable people, so there's nothing I can do to change his mind on whether or not he will smoke. But it's sad to see that he's choosing weed over his sister slash best friend. Is there an evolutionary route to why I get so upset seeing the people I love do things that I'm against? And is there anything I could do to stop my brother?
Well, really good question. I think I see elements of this in a lot of people in the Whole Foods plant-based movement because they happen to be a bunch of, you know, on average, a bunch of hyper-conscientious nutcases, you know, who are outliers with respect to the bell curve. And so they're trying to do things super healthfully. And I use that term with some affection, but I also with a warning. And that is this is an interesting problem. So let's step through this quickly because I know we've got a caller that we're going to want to get to. But if you're angry, you're angry because you think something's unfair. And we're trying to threaten somebody into making a concession. We're trying to get them to feel guilty so that they'll fix it. So in this case, the anger is being directed at family members who are not pursuing healthful living. And that's an interesting anger to have. Probably we'd have to look at some of the reasons why. So I would ask the person to do a little introspection here as to try to figure out what is it to them that the family member may be doing something that it is causing some harm to themselves. It could be that our hyper-conscientious nutcase may feel like that they're going to have to take care of the person if they harm themselves and wind up in a wheelchair drooling, et cetera. And so as a result, they feel that essentially their time and life's energy is being put at unnecessary risk behind another person's self-indulgence because they're sort of predicting that they may have to step in and take care of them. So that would be one inference. Another inference would be that they feel like their sort of coalition leading knowledge of how to live healthfully is being ignored and discounted, and the value that they are bringing to the coalition that they expect to receive esteem for doing so is not happening. So I'm not sure. There might be other reasons for the person being angry that I can't see, but I would assume that those are the two leading causes for people to be upset that their relatives aren't doing things properly. And often those two in combination are what's driving this. Now, let's unpack this. What we're going to try to do is we're trying to make sure that the person is correctly analyzing the cost-benefit analysis of the situation and that they don't have a distortion in what it is that they're thinking that could be causing a lot of the psychological distress that they're having. First of all, let's keep in mind that if a person smokes, it's only going to cost them about 10% of the life expectancy. So it's you know, hey, sort of, oh, well. And if I had somebody in my family that smoked, as long as I didn't have to smell it myself, my attitude would be, hey, you know, good luck to you. I think it's a bad deal, as you obviously know. You're not an idiot. But, you know, when you get into trouble, you know, if you get into trouble, you know, I just hope you're ready to make some accommodations, you know, for taking care of it, i.e. I would be signaling that I'm not interested in, you know, monitoring you in the nursing home behind this kind of self-destructive behavior. I wouldn't be nasty about it, but I'd probably send that signal. Not going to be a nurse or a purse for someone who does something that self-destructive. Now, your brother smoking weed, first of all, this is not going to be 10% of life expectancy. This is going to be 1 or 2%, 1% of life expectancy. So it's not in the same class with cigarette smoking for self-destructiveness to the person's body. Now, it may make them lazy and unmotivated and paranoid and everything else under the sun. And that's quite possible. And it may make them not very motivated financially and kind of broke and, you know, doesn't have health insurance, doesn't have a place to live and sort of, you know, I don't know. What other stereotype can I throw at this? But the point is so it does. Okay? So if you're the big sister or the little responsible sister, this doesn't mean that you have to purchase their health insurance, bail them out of their bad credit, give them a place to live or anything else under the sun. Okay? So, i.e., let the person live their own life and take the consequences that they're going to take. And if it's going to be the case that they're not, quote, respecting you for the knowledge and that you bring to the coalition to explain to them how bad or pricey these behaviors are, it's like, oh, well, you know, what's most important is your self-esteem. And we're not going to try to wear ourselves out trying to collect esteem from people who don't want to give it to us. And in this case, I would say that there's a question on the table, and that is, are they worthy of being coalition members or not? And if they are, wonderful. And with how it is that they are. And if they're really not, and they're just a big burden and a pain in the neck, and we don't get any appropriate esteem from them, then we move out to the disagreeable distance with family members that wouldn't naturally qualify to be coalition. Now, but my attitude is that if there are substantial positives, like my sister knows, you know, how it is that I live. She doesn't live that way. She's not really antagonistic, but she's not, you know, when I go down and visit her, I know she's struggling with her health. I don't lord this over her, and I'm not angry at her that she's not doing this, and I'm not frustrated, and I'm not, you know, tapping my foot saying, hey, what if you have a stroke and I got to take care of you? It's like, hey, you know, this is all about, you know, freedom. And people get to choose to do what they want to do with their lives. And sort of finding, I would recommend for this person, actually, How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World by Harry Brown, to sort of grasp the notion that our job in this life is to figure out our own identity, who it is that we are, what are the circumstances that we like to live in, and then try to find those as best we can. And the notion that we're going to try to shove our prescriptions about what we think is best for other people onto them, that's, I don't know. It is clearly part of human nature, but it's a part of human nature that it's worthy examining and seeing whether you can see your way to diffuse it. And in the case of your brother, if you've been very close to your brother, my attitude is, hey, you could have created with some of this anxious judgment, a bad esteem dynamic where he is now not interested in signaling esteem to you for the things he normally would because he's feeling like you are looking down on him and being very negative towards him. So the solution to curing an esteem dynamic that is in what we're going to call a vicious cycle, is to reverse field. Okay, reverse field and flood this guy with the esteem that he deserves for the reasons that he deserves it, for the things that you value about him, if there are such things. And if you do, the relief that will come in his nervous system of knowing that he is still esteemed by his sister will come with also esteem signals back to you, as he will signal to you how much he cares about you. This is the reversal of a vicious cycle, vicious esteem dynamic. And this is, you know, what I call flood the circuit or reversing the cycle. This is how it is that we can make our lives so much better, rather than locking ourselves into a cycle of anger and frustration because somehow we aren't getting the esteem from them that we deserve. I don't think that somebody's brother who's smoking dope is a major liability for your life. Okay, so if it is, then you have to examine why that could be true, but it's almost certainly not true. So careful, and let's think some of these things through. All right.
Fascinating. All right, we're going to go to the question about binging on broccoli next week, and for now we're going to take the caller right now. So
good.
Caller, thanks very much for your patience holding. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name, can you hear me?
Yes, you sure can.
Okay, my name is Sharon.
Very good.
And
okay,
Sharon. And I listen to Nate and Dr. Lyles. I listen to you all the time. And I've been trying to, I told my husband, I've got to see what Dr. Lyles, how he can help me or get his take, get your take on this matter. And what it is, our 40-year-old daughter, I'll try to ask this crystal clear. My 40-year-old daughter, who's a teacher, we're both retired, and we were keeping her 2-year-old son and her 11-year-old son for her part-time while she teaches. Well, she has an ex-husband that lives in Florida and comes back and forth to pick her 11-year-old up for visitation. And they feud all the time. But to make it short,
the problem is... Hold on, Who feuds?
My daughter and her ex-husband.
Got it, okay.
Feuds.
Right.
And she doesn't like for us to talk to him at all. And so we don't, just to keep things even. But what happened was my 11-year-old grandson had told her that his dad told him that we had talked to him on the phone, and we hadn't told her about it yet for the reason that we thought she'd make a big deal. Well, she's cut us totally out of her life since August, and we've always been a close family. Not the first time she's been mad at me over different things, but we would always get through it and talk about it. And anyway, I can't flood the circuit because even with things that I honestly really do love about her, because I think she's under a lot of stress, but we can't, she won't let us even in her house over there because she don't live far from us. But we're both under a lot of stress and hurt. And we realize that we, as grandparents that love her and her sons, that we did say some negative things to her. And we love her new husband. They've been married a year, and they have the 2-year-old. Her 11-year-old is by the guy in Florida. And Dr. Lyles, what can I do? I mean, I went to her school about 2 weeks after this happened and took her some flowers and candy and told her that I was really sorry. And my husband and my other daughter said, well, Mom, why did you do that? Now she's going to think you are guilty. And I said, I told her that I loved her and that I felt sorry that all this happened because I'd never intentionally hurt her. And I can't see my we can't see our 2-year-old. And it's just putting us in like a prison. And so I don't know what to do about it.
All right.
What would you suggest?
Yeah, let me let me talk this through. Let me ask you a few questions. So,
okay,
help me explain what it is that you did that upset her this much. Tell me again.
We actually, she thinks we collaborated with her ex-husband, talked to him.
Wait.
And,
there's a big difference between collaborating and talking. So,
okay, well,
try to get inside her head for a minute and don't tell me what you did do. Tell me what she thinks you did.
She thinks that we're talking to her husband.
Ex-husband.
Maybe her ex-husband about her, maybe, and taking his side against. I think it's more than just that. There's a lot of details. Her husband now, my husband told her, we got in the argument, and I told her the reason that I didn't tell her that her ex called us was because I was afraid she'd make a big deal out of it, and it had only been 2 weeks, so I hadn't had a chance to tell her. But I might have told her.
Well, slow down for me. So is this theoretically all about a single phone call?
No. It's so deep. No, it's not.
Okay.
It's about the whole dynamics of the whole relationship that we even talked to him without telling her.
Okay, slow down for me. So she thinks that you're what? Chit-chatting with her ex-husband behind her back. That's what she thinks.
Right. And my other daughter, who's close to her age, took a picture of her son with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And she hasn't talked to her for 5 months.
Okay,
so she cut them out of our life, life too.
Okay, so this all, so let's back up. How long has she been divorced from her ex?
This has been going on for probably 5 years now.
Okay,
she's been
going to
court in Florida over it.
All right, so this has been, you've been doing a bunch of babysitting for the last how many years with this 11-year-old son?
He goes to school. So, I mean, I would go get him if he missed a day or was sick or whatever. And I'd bring him over and keep him some. And same way with the 2-year-old. We're both retired.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't keep him full time because the little one goes to nursery.
Now, the
and
little
then I would
one does
keep him.
The little
the
one
two-year-old.
Is not. Yeah, okay. The 2-year-old is not from the same man. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay,
yes.
So it's really what's at dispute here is this 11-year-old son, and she's believing that you are talking with her ex about her 11-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
And has there been ongoing conflict between you and her over the last several years about this?
Not really, because I've supported her, and I even went to Florida to court with her because she didn't have anyone to go.
Mm-hmm.
Several times, and I've took care of her little one the last time she went while she went to court, because her husband, her ex, keeps texting her, and she says that he just harasses her all the time. So
okay, let's
they don't have
slow down for me. Hold on, Sharon. So let me get this straight. So for the last several years, you've been very supportive of her. There has not been conflict between the two of you, even though this man comes up. When does he come up to get the son, or does the son go on a bus and go down to visit him? How does this work?
No, he flies all the way from Florida to get Ethan, and some weekends he'll stay in our town and stay with him for 3 days and goes back to work.
Okay.
And that's why he had called us. He wanted to know if we would keep Ethan for like 3 hours because he had to be back home. He flies on his job.
Okay, let's try to get a little focused here. So let me, so we haven't had conflicts, and then suddenly now, this year, we've got a conflict.
Right, with us. She's
with
had
you.
Conflicts. Right.
She's had conflicts with him forever. I understand this. But
right.
with you, this is the first time we've had a big conflict.
One this big that she would kick us out of her life. Me and her have argued over minor things. Things
okay.
that weren't.
Yeah, forget about
what you
did. And
she would be mad at me for 3 days, but she's never been mad at me and her dad especially. She never gets
okay.
mad at him. She
okay.
kicked us both out.
Okay. And so this happened here in the last few months, and your, so you've, but this sounds
since
to
August.
Me, this was August, and this is, and this big blow up was as a result of a phone call that you had with her ex. Is that right?
Right. The day she came to get her kids, her son, her 11-year-old told her right in front of us.
Yes.
Because he knows how to trigger her. And he told
yeah.
her about this, that we had talked to her ex, to his dad.
How the heck, and so you had talked to his dad. Is your daughter under the bizarre impression that this man in Florida, the father of this boy, would not talk to you when there are logistical issues that would be appropriate for him to be talking to you about?
Right, because she says that he's narcissistic, and
I
she
couldn't
takes
get, wait,
her
wait,
11.
Slow down for me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you understand? Is it ever case in your daughter's view that it would be appropriate for you to talk to her ex around logistic issues about where Ethan goes, when he's coming to town, anything like this? Or is it always the case that you are
absolutely.
Never... What's that?
Absolutely.
Me,
we are
absolutely.
Not to talk to him unless she is around.
Okay, so you are not... Like, if he were to call your phone... or email you and say, I want to talk to you about when I'm going to pick up Ethan, you can't do anything. You have to forward that to your daughter, get your daughter on the phone so that she can talk to him and not you. Is that how this goes?
Exactly. He would never call us about
okay,
Ethan
well, listen.
Like that.
Yeah. Okay, he wouldn't call you. All right. So he called
right.
you, and he called you, and he was talking to you about Ethan about what?
About picking him up. He actually
no.
just texted us and said, can
okay.
you or your daughter pick Ethan up for 3 hours?
And the fact that you communicated with him and then Ethan says that you communicated with him in front of your daughter blew sky high and now she gives you the death penalty. Is that right?
Right. The fact that we didn't tell her, we hadn't told her yet that he had called.
Okay, you
so
know what?
She's
you're...
like kind of paranoid that we... are taking his side, and I think she's afraid that he's going to try to take Ethan away from her.
Okay, here's the deal. Okay, your daughter obviously is extremely disagreeable as a human.
She is.
From what
she
I,
is.
Okay.
She's
now,
on the big five.
All right. So it is what it is. Okay. So the so as a result, the you have a situation that. You know, this is what I call circuits or circuits. Okay, you can't
mm-hmm.
change people's personalities. You can manage disagreeable people as well as you can possibly manage them. The a disagreeable person like this, she's feeling for some reason, maybe in her new relationship, maybe she feels a little bit more powerful. Maybe she's a little more powerful economically or just psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she feels like you might be a little bit intrusive into her life in her new relationship, and she would just as soon find an excuse to push you 50 yards away, you know, psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what's going on inside this girl's head.
I'm really
but
close
I do,
to her kids.
Yeah, well, too
really
bad.
Close to her okay. two-year-old.
The truth is you're out of luck. Okay, so
yeah,
the deal
is
that this is what The only solution that you realistically have is what
mm-hmm.
I call Chinese water torture. Okay.
Chinese water torture.
Yeah,
okay.
might as well. offend a whole country with a billion people in it while I'm at it.
We can edit it out.
Chinese water torture is, you know, in the old movies, they would drop water down on your forehead until it drives you crazy, okay, something like that. Like, it's not hurting you, it just drives you nuts. So Chinese water torture is my solution for problems like this. And what we do is we send them positive, pleasant messages, okay? So like once a month, okay, if your daughter isn't talking to you, don't try it. Don't phone her then. Don't plead with her. Don't do anything of the kind. Just send her a letter, okay? Send her a letter about once a month, and if you want a little, you know, $25 ticket to Applebee's or something so she and her husband can go or whatever, all right? We just – some token little gift, not expensive, and a little on little Hallmark stationery, a little short note that says something about her dad, how he's doing, how you're doing, and hope she's doing well, and we miss you guys, please say hi, you know, whenever it makes sense, okay? Bye, love, Mom, okay? Then 30 days later, we do it again. 30 days later, we do it again, okay? As this edgy, negative, you know, difficult human being keeps getting Chinese water torture, okay? Sooner or later, the Chinese water torture can wear her down. In other words, this hasn't precipitated some big fight that she would be perfectly happy with, okay? Argument, telling you what to do, getting distance from you if she wants, justifying it by having a big blow up, whatever, okay? This is a disagreeable human. And yes, she's got her grandchildren hostage, your grandchildren hostage, and we don't know if she wants something from you for that hostage. We don't know, okay? Since you've already apologized and you've not transgressed in anything in any meaningful way at all, doesn't matter. We've run afoul of an extremely disagreeable human, right? And so did her sister. Same thing. Okay, takes a picture and she's excommunicated. All right. So be it. Okay. The truth is, this person, frankly, doesn't belong in your coalition. And if you don't treat people like this. Right? But she is in your coalition because she's your daughter, and worse yet, she's the mother of your grandchild. Right?
So you don't recommend I go to the door and see my grandkids? Hope she's let me in. I did that twice and got to play with him.
She let you in the door?
The first two times, the month of August. Then after that, her husband said, I don't blame her for being mad at y'all. And then after that, she had a stand at the door with Beckham crying for his Nana.
Oh, forget it. Don't put up with that. So, in other words, what you get to see is you get to see the kid through the little screen door and the kid gets to cry? Ridiculous. No.
Right. That's
Chinese
exactly
water
my
torture.
Thought.
No,
second
Chinese
time
water
I didn't
torture.
Go back.
Now, you know what? What you need to signal to this person is that you're going to be pleasant with them, but you're also not going to be on your knees.
Right.
Okay. That's why what they deserve is 5 minutes a month of your time as you jot down a friendly little note, wish them well, put in a little $25 thing to Applebee's or Starbucks, and call it a day. Okay?
Well, my husband said we would still get them a Christmas present, so that is okay to keep doing that.
Yeah, I would do those things. And Christmas, I don't overdo it. Okay? Mail it to them.
Don't bow down, but...
Don't bow down. Just be a pleasant, civil person yourself, and maybe someday this nutcase will come back and join you halfway in the middle for a while. Okay?
Right.
So that's all you can do. So, you know, this is, you know, the fact that she's got your grandchild hostage, too bad. You know, sorry. You're going to have to find other things to do with your existence than entertain yourself by watching this little child grow for the next year. It's like, you know what? There's going to be other years. This kid's going to grow and grow and grow. There's going to be all kinds of opportunities. So what we're not going to do is we're not going to panic now that we're missing some milestones. Forget about it. Go do something else. Go work on your golf game.
Well,
right?
I've been listening to you guys and Alan Goldhammer, so I'm working on my other problem, which is the pleasure trap. So, and I really do appreciate you guys because you really helped me with all your information.
Good, good. All right. Well, listen,
so
Sharon,
you really
that's...
helped me by that advice because now I've kind of got a hold on what I can do.
Yes, I gotcha. So that's what you do. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. Keep it pleasant. We're not on our knees to anybody, i.e. we signal to her, you know what, I can live without you. But we like you. You know what I mean? We like you. Here's a little positive, and we're going to drop it in the mail every month. We'll drop Christmas presents in the mail. They're going to be pleasant. We're not going to overdo it, okay? And that's that. And otherwise, you know, just sort of check off probably 2019. You know, she calls the ex a narcissist. Boy, that was a pair. That was a relationship match.
Exactly.
You know, oh yeah. Well, they deserved
She's
each other.
She's a narcissistic person. If anyone is.
Well, let's hope she's not listening to Beat Your Jeans. but at any rate, this is what you do, Sharon. So we're going to run along tonight because we're overtime. But thank you very much for calling. A really fine call, and good luck with that. Okay.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sharon, very much for the phone call. Really appreciate it. Thanks for hanging on there. And we'll wish you all a good night. Dr. Lau, thanks for running a little bit over time for us. We really appreciate it, as always.
Pleasure, Nate. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.
Progressive presents Get Pumped, inspiration to help you do insurance stuff.
Okay, time out. You're going to let your budget be the boss of you? Take control with Progressive's Name Your Price tool. Tell us what you want to pay for car insurance, and we'll help you find options that fit your budget. Here's some music to get you pumped. Da-dong-da-dong-da-dong-da-dong-dang-dang. I hear your budget laughing at you. Oh, wait, that's just those kids laughing at me. Ignore them!
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.